much good work is going on out there, and I'm really excited to be a part of it and to be presenting today, if my presentation will ever load. So I'm going to be describing long-term behavioral outcomes for children who live together with their mom for their during infancy in a prison nursery. But before I start, I want to acknowledge some people. I want to acknowledge our participants first, who have kept in contact with us, some of them now for 10 years, through many, you know, many hardships in their lives, and their hard work in following up with us has made this project possible. I want to acknowledge someone in the audience. Our former project director is here, and she's come from her busy day at the NIMH to see my presentation, and I'm so happy to have her here. And this work has also gotten really generous funding from the National Institutes of Nursing Research to the principal investigator, Mary Byrne, and two smaller grants to myself from the March of Dimes Foundation and Sigma Theta Tau. So one of the unintended consequences of our Get Tough on Crime policies here in the U.S. has been an increase in the number of children affected by the incarceration of their mothers and their fathers, but I'm going to be talking about incarceration mothers today, and an increase in the number of women who are pregnant upon their incarceration. And in the 42 blacked out states on the screen, children are separated at birth from their incarcerated mom, but the 8 states highlighted in green have prison nurseries in which eligible women are allowed to care for their children in a prison inside the prison setting. And modern U.S. programs are special segregated units, so they're away from the general population. And the women and children live together. And if you haven't seen one, what to me looks like a Spartan small dorm room. And you'll see on the bottom corner there a picture of the daycare setting at the prison nursery from which our sample was derived. And the children spend their day there, much like children in the community, while their moms fulfill their work requirements, go to groups, receive their treatment. So the general eligibility criteria across the U.S., though there is some variation, is that a woman be pregnant upon her admission into prison. And I am talking about imprisoned women. Allison's going to be talking about jails, and we always have this conversation about jail versus prison. But these are imprisoned women. They be convicted of a nonviolent crime, have an expected release date 12 to 18 months after the birth, and have no history of crimes against children. Now, the Second Chance Act, which is a federal act, has created a new funding stream for these programs in the hopes that they'll prevent recidivism. But there are lingering fears about the long-term effects of raising a baby in prison. Because of our team's work, Mary Byrne, myself, and Sarah, and other people on our team, we know that infants and toddlers raised in a prison nursery with developmental supports reach their developmental milestones on time in infancy and toddlerhood. We know that their rates of secure attachment are the same as low-risk community samples, and are basically inverse to what you'd expect given the high rates of insecure attachment in their mothers. And this is really in stark contrast to a small but important body of work showing really high rates of attachment insecurity in children separated from their moms due to incarceration. And the reason I'm talking about attachment is it's a really early key indicator of future development. But there's a huge gap in the knowledge of what happens to any child who's experienced early maternal incarceration after the mom their mom is released. And in this group of prison nursery kids, that usually corresponds to the preschool period. And behavioral regulation is really the salient developmental challenge of that period, and that's what I'm going to be focusing on today. So the specific aims of this study, which is a piece of a larger study, was to compare preschool behavioral development in children who lived with their mom in a nursery program and received a developmentally supportive nursing intervention to children who were separated from their mother during infancy or toddlerhood because of incarceration. And our hypothesis was that preschool children who were allowed to co-reside would exhibit significantly fewer behavior problems in the preschool period when you compared them to former separated kids. And the study was informed by the organizational perspective on development, which integrates attachment, ecological systems, and transactional developmental theories to look at child development in context. This was a secondary analysis using two existing samples. And there's a challenge of doing this work. I think it's an important and innovative question, but you can't randomize women to keep their babies in prison or not keep their babies in prison, and the criminal justice system makes that determination. So we had to get really creative to find a non-equivalent comparison group, and we'll talk in the end about some of the limitations of that, but I think that our estimates are sound. So incarceration disproportionately affects low-income minority single-parent families, and there are a number of large national data sets that have captured information on that group, one of which is the Fragile Families and Child Well-Being Study, of which you might be aware. And the great thing about this data set is it contained really good developmental data on this young group of kids, and it also included incarceration histories, which is unusual in data sets looking at child development. So the prison nursery sample has 47 children in our prison nursery study. The mean nursery stay was 9 months with a range of 1 to 18. And the separated children, there were 64 kids, a subsample, who had been separated from their mom in infancy or toddlerhood. Now, we were IRB approved, of course, and we had an additional certificate of confidentiality. And when you see some of our outcomes, you'll understand why. So this is a kind of a flow through both of the studies. It's really complicated. So let's look at the prison nursery part. Both of the studies followed the children from birth. For the prison nursery study, we used rolling enrollment to recruit 99 dyads inside the study. They received one of two nursing interventions, anticipatory guidance, and we didn't find any significant differences between the groups by intervention group. So for this, the purposes of this study, I've aggregated them to improve power. And baseline data from our ongoing project, we went back and re-recruited families when the child was at least 30 months of age. The baseline data for that is included here. The sample of 47 children I spoke about represents 59% of the total eligible sample of 79 children. So we initially had 99, but 20 of them have been excluded, some of whom because the mother left the nursery while pregnant. So she was on the nursery, but the child never experienced the nursery with her. And we did have one child who died in the nursery. So 32 additional families were lost to follow-up, which is a huge issue in these projects. And those families were more likely to self-identify as African-American, African, or Afro-Caribbean, and they also had shorter nursery stays. So on the right-hand side, you see the Fragile Families study. Families were recruited from hospital in 20 U.S. cities during the postpartum stay. They collected data at baseline at 1 and 3 years out, and data collection is actually continuing in that study. Participants were invited to an additional in-depth developmental interview, and the data from that portion is what I'll be using here. In order to identify the subsample, we used both mother's and the father's report of the mom's incarceration, because we know that sometimes when you're asked as a mother, have you ever done something bad? No, of course I'm not. You know, I've never done anything bad. So we used the mother and the father's reports of incarceration. So that's 64 families. And the other families, either we couldn't identify any incarceration, the mom had only been incarcerated before the child's birth, or the timing was unknown. So for the outcomes, for the primary outcome behavior problems, we used the child behavior checklist for 1.5 to 5 years, and it's really a gold standard in this area. We looked at aggressive and attention deficit hyperactivity behaviors to assess externalizing behavior problems, and anxious, depressed, and withdrawn behaviors to assess the internalizing behavior problems in this group. And since we wanted to look at everything in context, and we wanted to also be able to control for the noise related to selection bias and the differences in this group on potential ecological risks, we looked at education, marital status at the child's birth, whether the family was receiving public assistance. We also looked at substance use and problem drinking, both in the prenatal period and in the past 12 months. And we used that. We did that using questions that were developed for the Fragile Families questionnaire. We assessed parenting distress using Abedin's Parenting Stress Index short form, which is the measure to use for parenting stress. And that's norm reference. So we were able to code families whether they had a clinically elevated level of parenting distress or what we'd consider a normal level of parenting distress. And we also looked at harsh parenting, both in the forms of psychological aggression, minor physical assault, and neglect. And we did that using the conflict tactics scale parent-child, which is commonly used in this work. And finally, apart from their nature, the sheer number of risks in a child's life has been shown to be significantly predictive of development. So we made a cumulative risk scale score, summing 8 individual risks that you see here: low maternal education, prenatal and current substance abuse, public assistance receipt, elevated parenting distress, swearing or cursing at the child, minor physical assault on the child, and neglect on the child. So to analyze the aim that I'm presenting today, we initially looked at whether the scores were different between the groups. And if they were, we further explored them using separate between subjects and COBA models. And these models included two factors, whether the child had lived in the nursery or not, or gender, which we know is associated with behavior problems in this group, the interaction between co-residents and gender, and a propensity score and cumulative risk scale scores covariates. And the propensity score just was our attempt to statistically account for the differential probability of receiving the treatment, in this case the prison nursery, given some baseline differences, some baseline heterogeneity. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. And we created a separate cumulative risk scale score for any risks that were significantly associated with each of the developmental subscales. This study had pretty decent power for work in this area, 70% power, so we felt confident about that. So here's some of the demographics, and I want to highlight some relatively slight but statistically significant difference baseline, just demographic differences. Children who had co-resided were about 4 months older than the kids and had a wider age range than the kids who were separated, but still within the same developmental period, so you'd predict that they would have the same behavior problem scores on average baseline. The mothers were also a little bit older, but still in their mid to late 20s. It's not like we had adolescents in one group and older moms in another group. And moms in the prison nursery were also more likely to be white, non-Latina, whereas women in the separated group were, the vast majority were African American. And I want to point out, too, that most children in both groups were being cared for by their mom, but some kids were with alternate caregivers, which is also common in this population. There weren't any significant differences in ecological risk factors, and you see here that they were, you know, really high in both groups. There were high rates of prenatal substance abuse. 20% of the caregivers for separated kids and about a quarter of the caregivers in our group were currently using substances. They overwhelmingly received public assistance. About a fifth in both groups had elevated levels of parenting distress, and harsh parenting was particularly common. 36% of the former nursery parents and 22% of the former separated parents swore or cursed at their preschool child regularly. Also reported, almost 80% reported either spanking on the bottom with a hand or hard object, slapping the child in the face, hand, arm, or leg, pinching or shaking their child. And then we had slightly over 10% of the caregivers in both groups reported neglect. And for the most part, it was, you know, I'm so overwhelmed with life, I can't show my child that I love them as much as I want to. But we also had some instances of medical neglect, difficulty caring for the child due to intoxication, and leaving the child without supervision. And these are 3-year-old children. So when we looked at everything, the cumulative risk scale, families reported an average of 3 risks, and it was exactly the same on both sides, but 20% of the caregivers reported 5 or more of these risks. So I think it was important that we looked at that. So when we looked at the raw behavior problem scores, when we looked at the outcome, we found no significant mean differences for either of the externalizing behavior problem scales, aggression or attention deficit, but we did find significant differences in both of the internalizing subscales. And so we went on to look at those further in multivariate models. And you see here for the anxious, depressed behavior problems, the overall model was significant and predicted almost a quarter of the variance in this, which is really high when you're predicting something as complicated as child development. Co-residing in a prison nursery was associated with 1.24 points less for anxious, depressed behavior problems, even after we accounted for gender, cumulative risk, and that differential propensity to have received the nursery, given that some of the baseline heterogeneity. And we found that the risk was important, and I'm glad that we assessed for it, because it was associated with almost 1 more point for each risk that the child had experienced. For withdrawn behavior problems, when we looked at the full withdrawn model, prison nursery co-residence was no longer associated with behavior outcomes. But risks, again, were, and gender was. Female gender was associated with scoring almost 1 point less. And again, the cumulative risk scale was associated with higher scores. So, you know, this is one of the only studies to examine any dimension of long-term child development. of maternal incarceration in infancy or toddlerhood, and it's the only study that we know of to assess outcomes as far out as the preschool period. And the study of early childhood development in the context of the reentry period, we think, really adds to this body of literature. We found, that prison nursery co-residence was associated with resilience to anxious, depressed behavior problems despite high levels of ecological risk. And theoretically, we believe that attachment security may provide the protective factor moderating the effects of the high levels of ecological risk experienced by both groups on preschool behavioral outcomes, particularly those anxious, depressed behavior outcomes. And we think secure attachment serves as a buffer even in children with a genetic susceptibility to psychopathology. Actually, we don't think that it's been shown in research. And evidence is also mounting that loss or separation from a parent early in life affects the HPA axis in the brain, which is associated, is hypothesized to play a large role in the etiology of mood disorders. So our findings theoretically made sense in that respect. Secure attachment was supported by the prison nursery. We've shown that in the work that we've published on the study. And separation damaged that secure attachment. So we found elevated rates of aggressive behavior problems in both children. And I didn't report the results coded for clinical significance or not, which was another aim of my dissertation. But we did have very high rates of clinically significant aggressive behavior problems in both groups. And I think in this respect, it's attachment, it's adversity overwhelming attachment security, especially given the near universal reporting of harsh parenting. Of the four problem areas measured, the four behavior outcomes, aggressive behavior problems in this age is most closely associated with adversity in the caregiving environment. So in looking at the clinical significance of the findings, the mean differences were relatively small, but we believe clinically significant. Scores differed by a half a standard deviation, which is the same difference seen between clinical and non-clinical samples. And in clinical terms, this difference means that caregivers for the separated children described on average one additional symptom consistent with anxiety, depression, to be, which is like acting sad, fearful of self-conscious, to be sometimes true for their preschool child. And the preschool period is not a period that we associate with sad and fearful behavior. So there are some limitations. I talked about, there's selection bias. Attrition is always a problem in longitudinal studies with vulnerable populations. I think we did have 70% power, but we didn't have enough power to have really good confidence intervals. And then there are some issues of generalizability in that this isn't just warehousing. These aren't results if you just warehoused a mom and a baby together. These families did receive support, which I think leads me to some of my implications. So I think that co-residence and prison nurseries should be promoted as a best practice in corrections. They can be cost-efficient given the new funding streams, and also the use of non-correctional funding, which a lot of systems have done, makes it cost-efficient for the system. There are quality outcomes. I've just reported positive preschool outcomes. We've previously reported positive attachment outcomes. Other people have found decreased recidivism outcomes. But the access is limited to the approximately 135 mothers and children that can be served by programs that are currently in existence. And this does not include women inmates in California, Texas, Florida, or Georgia, which are four of the five states with the largest prisoner censuses. To staff these programs and to, I think, ensure that you have these positive outcomes has to be interdisciplinary civilian staffing in addition to corrections officers, people with expertise in substance abuse, mental illness, trauma, and child development. And like I said, the programs have to provide more than just putting the families together. And it's important to continue that work into reentry when ecological risks come back in a big way into these families' life. And I think I guess one piece before I say this, community co-residence alternatives, I think, also should be explored. For the most part, women in this study were drug offenders and property. They had done property crimes to get drugs. I think that it's a good bet to keep these women in the community, and actually newer work is supporting that. My own recent study, completed study, looking at women in an ATI program would support positive outcomes, even for women who would not have qualified for this prison nursery. women with violent felony crimes allowed to stay in the community in a supportive environment can have positive outcomes. And finally, regardless of whether you look at this from the perspective of a clinician or of a researcher, we know that these families have a lot of problems and a lot of challenges, and now we need to do something about it, and we need to evaluate what's currently being done and also experimental interventions to continue to support health equity in this group. And here's a picture of some of the children in the study. I couldn't hide myself.